Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and we are going to start to look ahead to the upcoming NFL draft, which takes place in Chicago, April 30th to May the 2nd. And as ever, I'm joined by my partner from Sky Sports, Jeff Reinbold. And Jeff, the draft is always such an exciting time for fans, isn't it? There's that hope that you're going to build your team and add talent. I mean, this is when fans can sort of start to believe, I guess.
Yeah, you know, you take last year, for example, and Odell Beckham comes to the Giants, and he makes such a huge impact as a rookie and really, you know, gives the Giants hope going into the future to have maybe one of the better, you know, receiving combinations in the league. Or, you know, you're another guy that sits in and says, hey, who's going to be the next Tom Brady? Who's going to be that sixth-round draft choice that's going to be a Hall of Famer? So there's so much intrigue with the draft, and it's really covered so well at every level now that the fans really do have a feel of, you know, who's in the pool and what the experts feel about those guys.
Before we get to the draft, we're going to take a break from our State of the Franchise series for a couple of weeks. So this week we're going to look at offensive players in the draft. Next week, defensive players. And also, before we get to that, we'll take some news from around the NFL. And Jeff, my Twitter has absolutely blown up this week, begging that we talk about the signing of a third string quarterback at best. So I wondered,
you're on the clock, Neil. How you got 15 seconds to talk about this guy, and then let's move on.
All right, Jeff. So I ask you, Green Bay have signed quarterback Matt Blanchard from the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. He's got practice squad experience with Chicago and Carolina. Is that a good move for the Packers? That is the only third string quarterback I'm talking about this week.
Great job. You danced around that one. Outstanding.
Right.
You know, you talk about Tebow.
I'm not talking about Tebow. You can, my friend.
Yeah, you know what? You just got to, you shake your head and you go, you know, this really is got to be it for him. His last shot at it. And I know the kids worked really hard in the offseason with flying out to California twice a week to see a throwing coach. And, you know, you got to give him credit for how hard he's worked to chase this thing. But now if this doesn't work for him in Philadelphia, then I think that's going to be the end.
Yeah, and that's time up on that. Let's move on. So all the off-season workouts look like they're up and running. I noticed, Jeff, Antonio Brown is not working out for Pittsburgh, and Eric Weddle is not working out for San Diego. He says he feels disrespected. From a fan's point of view, it's not time to worry yet, is it? I mean, are they mandatory? I'm not sure all of them are. I mean, they are for some teams. I mean, a lot of teams expect players to be there, but it's not time to panic yet, is it?
Yeah, when you say is it mandatory, voluntary, whatever, you know, bottom line is your coaches expect you to be there, and the teams expect you to be there. I think, to be real honest with you, at times this stuff can all get overblown. You know,
yeah.
Antonio Brown's looking for a new contract, and he's trying to make a statement. You know, and Eric Weddle, same thing. I don't get too excited about all that stuff at this point, especially if you're in a, you know, with a team that has, you know, a veteran coaching staff. If you're a new team where you've got all new guys and you're trying to, you know, like what's going on in Buffalo and some of the other places around the league where they're trying to get their team organized and everybody get to know each other and all that stuff. That's the real value in these conditioning sessions. It's what it does for you in the locker room, not so much what it does for you on the field.
Well, just getting those guys back together must be a big thing, isn't it, Jeff?
Right, it's huge, and that's, again, the every team, every year is different. There's never 100% continuity on any football team in the National Football League, and same with the coaching staff. So, you know, a team is going to have its own individual personality, and that personality begins to be developed in your off-season work, in your, you know, weight room work, in the things that are going on right now, because they're not doing football right now. This is all basically weight training and running and conditioning.
49, the schedule is going to be released later tonight. That's always an exciting time for NFL fans as well. You can look at my dream week one schedule is on NFLUK.com at the moment, but that's always something to look forward to, and we'll discuss that next week on Inside the Huddle. And I noticed, Jeff, news-wise, Alex Boone said that Jim Harbaugh wore out his welcome in San Francisco. He also said that his former coach might be clinically insane. But I wanted to touch with you on the the wearing out of the welcome, because the great Bill Walsh always used to say that, you know, coaches had a shelf life, from, you know, whether it be 5 years, 10 years. At some point, players start to tune out, even the very best of coaches. I mean, do you buy that, or do you think coaches can reinvent themselves, reinvent their message?
Well, I think that's probably true. I think there's been very few, particularly in modern football. You know, there are very, very few Tom Landrys anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's difficult for a coach to maintain that edge with his team over a protracted period of time. And when you've got a personality like Harbaugh has, where he's so intense and he's so hyper competitive, and as Alex Boone said, there are days you just want to kick his, and I won't say where we want to kick him, but you know that wears on a player. And you know, players are different today too than they were in previous days, they're more sophisticated, they're getting hit, bombarded with different ideas and different thoughts, and you know the media exposure is so much greater. So it makes the coach's job actually tougher. I agree with that statement that I think every coach has a shelf life, and John Madden said that. He said there's a point where you just know they're not your team anymore, and it's time to move on.
And then can you take the same? So you can take the same message. You just, like Rex Ryan has gone to Buffalo. That's, you don't have to change yourself as a coach. It's just fresh, is it?
It's time. Yeah, it's a time to get to a different place and a different group of athletes hearing a different message. And hopefully it's a situation. And I think this is why Buffalo has, you know, really just adopted him, and really it's so far anyway, it's gone extremely well in Buffalo. Is he gives Buffalo something that they've never had, a little bit of swagger, somebody that's willing to stand up and say, we're gonna go up there and punch New England in the mouth, and all of that stuff is positive right now in Buffalo because they've never had that. However, you know, Jason Morrow's comments about, you know, 5 years into the regime in New York, you know, it started to wear off. That you know, braggadocio or whatever you want to call it started to wear thin. And you know, I think that's just natural. That's just natural situation when you're in this business.
Isn't Rex Ryan a breath of fresh air when it comes to sort of NFL coaches, though, Jeff? Because the Jason Morrow comments were made, and they were put to Rex, and he was like, well, we are going to stick it to him, and he is going to be accountable for those comments. And if they don't beat the Jets, I don't think anyone's going to go back and say, well, it's because you made those comments, Rex. I think Rex is actually fronting up and saying stuff, which I think more coaches should do around the league.
I agree with that 100%. I think he really is a breath of fresh air, and he's not. Obviously, he enjoys what he does. He loves being a football coach. He loves being around the game. He's, you know, grew up in that. Mm-hmm. You know, he's very comfortable in his own skin. He knows who he is. He doesn't try and be somebody that he's not. And, you know, Rex is Rex, and you're going to get that, just like Rob. You know, Buddy brought two sons onto the earth that were very much independent thinkers and are very comfortable in telling you exactly how they feel, and to the point of, you know, with Robbie in particular, if you don't want an honest answer, then don't ask him a question, because that's the only way he can answer anything is with an honest answer. So I think those guys are what I would like to see more coaches be. I hear enough of the mumbling and, you know, coach speak and trying to talk your way around things. And, you know, it's such difference here when Doug Marrone's press conferences were always very businesslike and professional, no question about that. But now when Rex is on, you know, on the radio or on in a press conference, he always kind of sit there and wait, well, what's he going to say next? So, and I think that's actually positive. I really do think it's positive. And I think the players,
yes,
frankly, appreciate that. But let me tell you something about Rex. He says to his football team, and I think this is really good, he says, guys, you can say anything you want, but just make sure that you talk about two of your teammates and a coach when you're interviewed. So it's not all about you.
Yeah.
And I think that's really good. And if you listen to what Rex says, he does that. He's always pushing the sunshine somewhere else. He's always sharing that moment with players or coaches on his staff.
I can tell you from spending time with Eric Wood, the Buffalo Bills, he's a captain for that team. He's the starting center. He loves, and I think the players in that locker room are going to love Rex Ryan, the swagger that he brings, Jeff, the bravado. And hopefully, so there it doesn't just become about making headlines, does it? It becomes about changing an attitude and that trickling down into the locker room and then out onto the field.
Right. And, you look at the Bills, and the Bills, he is maybe a perfect match for them right now because they are a talented football team. They just needed something to get them over the hump. And I think that his energy, his confidence, his swagger, if you will, I think those are the things that can help get them, a step closer to New England in that AFC East.
All right, let's have a look at the NFL draft then. We're going to look this week at offensive players. So we're not going to go through every single player, of course, every prospect, but just ones that catch the eye and are going to make the headlines in Chicago between April 30th and May the 2nd. We always get drawn to quarterbacks, Jeff. 12 of the last 17 first overall picks in the draft have been quarterbacks. Some have been hugely successful. Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, Cam Newton. Then we've had Tim Couch and Jamarcus Russell. I mean, you can still be in a situation where you never quite know what you've got. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers pick first. And I guess it's between Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota.
You know, when you talk about those names, Neil, and all of the years that I've done this and I've watched and evaluated players, and, there are very few Andrew Lucks. There are very few guys that when you look at them coming out of college, the system that they played in, the way that they handle themselves, their mechanics, all of those things, you look at that guy and you go, there's an NFL quarterback. Peyton Manning was one of those guys. Andrew Luck was one of those guys. But it's a very difficult position to evaluate for professional football, for the NFL, because so few teams actually run NFL-type systems.
Yep.
And that is one of the things, as we talk about this year's crop of quarterbacks, to me it's a very thin quarterback crop. There are two guys
two
in
the
draft
first
that
round.
I think there are two guys that are worthy of, spending some time on. And interestingly enough, one of those guys plays in a pro system and one of those guys doesn't. And that may be the deciding factor when you look at them about who's going to go first of the two.
Yeah, let's flip it around then, Jeff, because Jameis Winston is the guy who's got that pro-style experience. But I wanted to ask you about Marcus Mariota in terms of that kind of system that he's been in Oregon, where it's spread them out, it's designed to be simplified and quick reads, isn't it? And straight away I thought, well, that's what they tried to do for Colin Kaepernick, so and this guy can run as well. So is that a concern for teams, or are they looking at Mariota and saying, well, this is what he was asked to do at Oregon, and he did it very well. So if we ask him to do something different, he can do that. That's what you don't know, isn't it? I guess where you're trying to project.
Yeah, you really have to project with him. And you know, when you talk about Marcus Mariota, the first thing that you go to is he's 6'4", he's 219 pounds, he's 4'6", 5", in the 40. He's a great athlete at the position, much like a Kaepernick, although he's a much better thrower than Kaepernick was coming out of Nevada. Here's the thing about this kid. He's got all the size, the speed, the strength in his arm, the ball. He's got a quick release, not a great release, but a quick release. I think he's a superior athlete to anybody in the draft this year at that position, and maybe for a couple years. He's got tremendous work ethic. He's a leader in the locker room. He is a senior, 42 touchdowns and only 4 interceptions. Now, you can criticize the scheme that he was in, but you can't criticize the performance within that scheme, right? And I think that's sometimes we get away from that. One of the things that every team that's got quarterback interest has gone to see him at Oregon. Some have even gone back to Honolulu, and I have friends back there, and it was amazing. Tampa Bay went back to Honolulu to talk to his high school people, to see where he grew up, to try and get a feel for who he was as a kid. And if you go back into that, you know, he's been a winner since he started playing football as a high school kid in Honolulu at St. Louis High School. Scott Frost, who's his quarterback coach at Oregon, has really been vocal about how frustrated he is that some of the questions that the NFL coaches ask about him. He's gotten Chip Kelly's come out and said this kid can win two or three Super Bowls in his career as a quarterback. So he's got all of that. But the question you got to ask is, and I think it's a valid question, he's played in a no-huddle offense. He was only underneath the center seven times as a senior.
Yeah.
They typically don't huddle. How is he going to manage that football team? How is he going to step into that huddle with, you know, guys that have been playing 7, 8, 10 years and manage that football team? Now, I believe in the kid, but I think those are still valid questions. How is he going to adapt to that NFL offense?
Yeah, because the footwork could be an issue as well, not being under center. You mentioned Scott Frost there, Jeff. One thing that stood out to me when I read some comments from him, he said that Marcus never made the same mistake twice, and that's where you hope that the intangibles sort of take him to the next level in the NFL. Let's talk about Jameis Winston for a second, because you just gave an insight there into the amount of work the Buccaneers have done in researching Mariota. They're going to do the same for Jameis Winston. I mean, of course, with Peter King described him as the most scrutinized draft pick of all time. There's been 7 off-the-field incidents at Florida State, ranging from alleged sexual assault to shoplifting. So people now are saying, bad guy or just immature. So, I mean, we'll look at that part of it in a second, but what do you see as a football player first?
All right, you know, when you look at him as a football player, here's what you got. He's 6'4", he's 231 pounds. He's not very fast. He ran 4.97. That's very pedestrian. That's offensive linemen run that in the 40 at the combine. He has great size. He's got arm strength. The ball, he has a very quick release. The ball comes out of his hand. He has, when you watch him throw in drills, you see him be accurate. He played in a pro-style offense at Florida State. He's got great pocket presence. He has that kind of awareness in the pocket that great quarterbacks have.
Yeah.
He's confident, maybe borderline cocky, you know, and I'll tell you why I say borderline cocky, because he threw 18 interceptions last year.
Yeah.
18 interceptions last year. That would concern me maybe as much as the off-field stuff, because if you throw 18 interceptions against college players, remember, those windows are really tight in the NFL,
yeah,
and those guys can really close in the NFL.
Well, Jeff, I was going to ask you about that, because the interceptions, they put Florida State in a hole at times last year, and I think there were 6 games where he brought them back to win, and part of me thinks that's fantastic. That shows you've got some sort of moxie and a way of leading your team when the game's on the line and you can't make any more mistakes. But also, we know in the NFL, if you get behind, and you're, especially if you're a rookie quarterback, and you get in a hole, you're probably just making life more difficult for yourself, and you're not going to come back and win those 6 games.
Well, yeah, and that's why, you know, when you look at it and you say, okay, he's going to go to the Bucs.
Mm.
Well, Lovey's belief system has always been what?
Protect the ball.
Protect the football. Win on defense, run the ball, play action, and throw. Now, he can do those things. He can throw the ball with anybody ever, right? I mean, he's got that kind of ability. But does he fit into a system where protecting the football is of prime importance, and yet you throw 18 interceptions, you know, your last year in college football? Doesn't fit. Now, as you break those interceptions down, a lot of them were really decision interceptions where he tried to force a ball where it didn't really belong.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, that again would, that's a red flag to me. It really truly is a red flag to me. I everybody gets caught up with all the off season stuff and out of season stuff and off the field stuff. And I think that's valid. But the 18 interceptions as a football guy is what's concerning to me.
Yeah, there were a lot of those in the sort of intermediate range, a lot of them where he was staring down one receiver. So there was a pattern to those as well, Jeff. It wasn't just like they were Hail Marys at the end of a half or anything. They were all kind of in a similar area when you're looking at attacking a defense depth wise, which would suggest that it's certainly an area of his game that he needs to work on.
Yeah. You know, and the two guys are diametrically opposite personalities.
Yeah.
Winston's a guy that's vocal. He's, you know, he's got a big smile on his face. Mm. He's a guy you want to like, right? But when I hear him, I have a sense of you know, like I'm being sold a used car.
Well, Jeff, there was a great thing I listened to on American radio the other day. It was talking about the difference between charisma and leadership, and they were saying, don't just be fooled into thinking Jameis Winston is an automatic leader in the NFL because he's a charismatic person. I mean, some of the best leaders do it by example and do it by being, as you've talked about before, being the first in the building, being the last out. I always look at Jacksonville. Paul Posluszny is not the most vocal of guys, but everyone on that team looks up to him. He's the one that kind of leads by example. So, you know, Winston being a charismatic person, which he is, doesn't mean he's going to be a leader in the locker room. They're two different things, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are, and particularly when you're at that position. So, you know, as I said, I've watched the kid really close. I've watched all of the off-season interviews, you know, and I get the feeling that he's very well rehearsed and that it's almost like I'm being sold something.
That's what Manziel did last year.
Yeah, and my BS meter goes off when I hear him, you know, on some of these things. I watched him on the show with Mariucci the other day, and you watched him work out, and you go, wow, that kid's got ability. Mm. But then there was kind of that sense of, you know, it's all an act. And I, you know, again, 7 off-field things, and, you know, you're not talking about parking tickets. You're talking about serious stuff. Do you want to put your millions into that guy? I think the Bucks are going to take him with the first pick. I just think there's too much pressure. He's a Florida State guy. There's a huge Florida State contingent. They're trying to sell tickets. I think there's just too many reasons why they have to take him with the first pick. And I'm hopeful that the kid will mature and have a great NFL career.
So you think Bucks take him first? If it was a Jeff Reinbold quarterback rankings big board, would Winston still be number one on that list, or would you have Mariota ahead of him?
I think, you know, to be honest with you, I would have Mariota ahead of him just because of the things we talked about, mm-hmm. right? One guy threw 4 interceptions, and, you know, the other guy threw 18. Mm. That's an alarming difference between the two. You know, excuse me, you know, Mariota threw 42 touchdown passes, you know, as last year. That's 42 touchdown passes to 4 interceptions in the Pac-12. He didn't do that against, you know, the Southern Conference or some, you know,
yep.
low-level competition. The guy has done it. Now, excuse me. Now, again, I give Winston higher marks when you look at him in his ability to throw from the pocket right now, right? He's further along. His footwork's better. His pocket demeanor's better, all those things. But, again, you're talking about making a huge, huge decision, and there are too many factors in Winston that make me go, boy, you know.
All right, that's quarterbacks. Let's move on to running backs while Jeff has a sip of his coffee. I'm sure it's there. It's early morning in Canada.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, get that throat sorted, Jeff. Let's look at running backs then. So there hasn't been a running back taken in the first round since Trent Richardson went 3rd overall in 2012, and that was a double failure because it didn't work out for the Cleveland Browns. Then Indianapolis gave up a first-round pick for him, and that didn't work out, and now he's with the Raiders. But we could have... in what is supposed to be a devalued position. We could have two guys go in the first round this year. Todd Gurley of Georgia and Melvin Gordon of Wisconsin. Do you see both going in round one, Jeff?
I tell you what, I love this running back pool. I think
this is a
great, deep pool of running backs. And, I mean, and there's size here. There's really quality all the way through. I think if you need a running back, and this is really interesting, if you're a team like, say, for example, the Cardinals who need a running back,
yep.
you're going to have access to a great player at your pick. And you're going to have access to a great player at a lower pick.
Yeah.
So you may say, I want to trade down because how many teams are looking for a running back?
Yeah.
It's a deep pool. Then there are a lot of guys where there's not a lot of separation in this class.
Same with Jacksonville, Jeff. Jacksonville could go number 3. They could go quality defender because they know early second round they might get a Jay Ajayi from Boise State, the British kid who's going in the draft. I mean, there's quality to be had, isn't there, into the second, third, and fourth rounds.
Yeah, and you know what? And as we talk about these guys, I put on my notes that I think there'll be players available even into the third round.
Yeah.
That, you know, in the old days would have been first round draft choices.
Yep.
Because you talk about the devalued position, but it's a very, very good draft. You like Gurley maybe a little bit more than I do. Mm. I'm a Melvin Gordon fan.
Yep.
I'm going to tell you why. You know, Gurley is big. They're, you know, you look at them both. They're both 6'1". Gurley's 222. Gordon's 215. Gurley is faster. And Gurley has maybe more home run ability. The ACL thing concerns me.
That's
right?
That's the knock, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, ACL surgeries come a million miles in the last 10 years, 15 years. But anytime you got a guy with an ACL, you have to, in my opinion, you have to downgrade him a little bit. Gurley can return kickoffs. He's got that return ability.
That was what I was going to say, Jeff. I watched the game. I went back and watched some film on Gurley, and I watched the season opener from 2014 against Clemson, and he did. He had 15 carries, 198 yards, 3 touchdowns. So it was a good game to pick anyway. But what impressed me was that there was work between the tackles, and I've seen him compared to Marshawn Lynch and Steven Jackson. He looked comfortable running between the tackles. He got to the outside, but then he went and ran back a kickoff, 105 yards for a touchdown. I mean, you don't see Marshawn Lynch running back kickoffs. I know it's college football, and I know it's not, you know, the NFL, but that really was impressive to me. I think if he gets a clean bill of health, he could be pretty special.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. And again, the guy that he reminded me of when I watched him play, and this is a statement, but mm-hmm. I'm going to make it. He reminded me of Bo Jackson because he could do all that stuff.
Yep.
Bo Jackson was big and strong and could run, like you said, between the tackles. And he also had the ability, if you toss it to him and he gets to the corner, he turns the corner, he's going to, you know, he'll outrun defensive backs.
Mm.
You know, for long ones, and he has, as you said, has that return ability. I think he and Gordon very, very close. I give Gordon a slight edge because because of the injury thing with Gurley.
Yeah.
But I think if Gurley's knee is healthy, and apparently everything I've heard, everything, all the research I've done, he's got a clean bill of health right now with that knee, then obviously I think he'll be, if not the first one taken, it'll be one of those two will be the first one taken.
Jeff, I'm going to spend a couple of days later this week with Jay Ajayi. He's coming back into the UK, so he was born in England, lived in London the first 3 years of his life, then lived out in Essex for another 3 or 4 years before moving to America. So we're going to take him back to his old school and do some of that. What do you make of him? What are we looking at there? Second round for Jay?
I think he's going to be a second-day guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, there are a couple things that you have a little bit of concern when you look at him. You know, he doesn't have a great 40 time, a 4.57, which is not bad, but it's not great. He's 6 feet. He's 221 pounds, so he's got enough physical stuff to him.
Mm-hmm.
The knock on Ajayi when you talk to the scouts is he puts the ball on the ground too much. And, you know, fumbling in the National Football League is, you know, you know how coaches are about fumbling, you know, but he's tough. He's athletic. He can get you chunks. I don't think he's a breakaway guy, but he certainly can get you chunks. He averaged 5.4, you know, and had 1,600 yards at Boise State and 25 touchdowns. So obviously he's a quality player. I think he's, you know, you look at him and you always worry with a Boise kid or a kid from the Mountain West. You know, that's what we call mid-major competition. That's not elite competition. But when you watched him play, you know, against Ole Miss, when he had to go into the SEC and play down there, he played extremely well. And he rose to the level of competition. I think the kid is going to be a good pro. And I think he's going to be somebody's. This is the guy I'm talking about, Neil. This is a second round, maybe third round guy that somebody's going to be really, really happy with for a lot of years.
And that's the good thing about the running back position, because across the league we're looking at more running by committee. There's another bunch of guys after that: Amir Abdullah from Nebraska, Duke Johnson from Miami, Tevin Coleman, Indiana, David Johnson, Northern Iowa, TJ Yeldon, Alabama. These are all guys who could come in and do a job for a team as a rookie, Jeff, and it's not going to cost you a first or second round draft pick. It's probably, you know, a third or a fourth, and they offer great value even if they're not going to necessarily be franchise backed.
Absolutely, and you look at, and you know, always you're always thinking as a coach, right? And you're building a general manager or scout, and you're building a team. What else can the guy give us?
Yeah.
Right. So when you talk about guys like T.J. Yeldon, T.J. Yeldon's 6'2", 230 pounds. Mm. I mean, he's a big guy who can run. Now, what does that translate to? That translates to a great special teams player. Mm-hmm. That's why, again, you like Ajay because of the toughness that he has. So he can be that second back or third back, but he's covering kicks and he's doing all those things because he demonstrates the physical toughness. Abdullah, right, again, has return ability. Now, he's not as big. He's only 5'9", but that's going to help your football team. And you know, the saying in the National Football League, and it's the more you can do, the longer you can stay. And each of these guys in this running back pool brings more than just their ability to, you know, run the football.
Let's move on to wide receivers and tight ends then. And in the same way as last year, it was a very good group of receivers. It looks like it's going to be that way again. We talk about depth as well. And last year you saw Indianapolis get somebody like Dante Moncrief in the third round. Pittsburgh got 8 touchdowns out of Martavis Bryant in the fourth round. Jeff, there could be as many as, I don't know, I've seen as many as 7 players in the first round discussion. This seems to be an ongoing trend now that it used to be a while back that the wide receiver position was a tough one to make the transition from college football to the NFL. These guys that we're looking at and going to talk about in the next few minutes will be expected to contribute from day one.
Absolutely, and I think all of them that we're going to talk about, every single one of them that we're going to talk about, has, you know, immediate contribution type skills. Mm. Right? What defines this group more than anything else, Neil, in addition to the depth of the group, to me, it's the size. When you look at these guys, Amari Cooper, 6'1", Kevin White, 6'3", Devontae Parker, 6'3", Jalen Strong, 6'2", you know, Breshad Perryman, 6'2". Yeah. They're big guys.
Dario Greenbeckham, 6'5".
Yeah, they're big people. They're big guys who can run, and you know that's what they're looking for. That's the profile, if you will, that the teams are looking for. The only one that's a smaller guy is Philip Dorsett at 5'9", but these are big, strong bodies. 215, 220, you know, and they're still carrying, you know, Kevin White's 215 at 6'3 and runs 4.35. That's incredible. I mean, that's the kind of athletes that are coming out of college football now at the receiver position.
We'll talk about Philip Dorsett in a minute, Jeff. I watched some film on him, watched a couple of games of him yesterday. I was actually really impressed. I think he might end up sneaking into the first round or certainly being a good value pick in the second round. But who's top of your pile here? Because there's a lot of debate about Amari Cooper, Kevin White. Cooper had more production over a longer period at Alabama. There's a belief that Kevin White may have a little bit more upside because he's, you know, junior college transfer and he's only played 1 year, top flight college football. Is it between those two as your top guy?
To me, it's Cooper, and I'm going to tell you why. To me, it's played at a high level.
Yep.
Played in a program that produces NFL players. I mean, played at a place where, you know, you're going to get coached hard at Alabama, and there's going to be a high demand on you at Alabama. He played in a system at Alabama that is very, you know, Lane Kiffin is the offensive coordinator there. It's a NFL system, right? It's that, you know, their staff is loaded with pro guys. So I think the kid will come more pro ready than Kevin White. You mentioned Kevin White's background as a JC kid. He's playing in a different style of offense. He's playing in the same offense Crabtree played in as a college player. So, and you know, sometimes that can make it a tougher transition, you know, because it's more detailed and more disciplined and all the things that are asked of you as a wide receiver. So I give Amari Cooper. Plus the fact, when you look at Cooper, Neil, the thing that, you know, really impressed me about him is he always plays big in big games.
Yep.
You know, he dominated in big games, and I think that's an indication of who that guy is.
Looking at a lot of lists, Jeff, it seems that after those two, it's Devontae Parker out of Louisville. And just one, I mean, you can go into what you think of him. I just noticed this stat. Since Since the start of 2012, Parker's made 138 catches, and he's dropped the ball just three times. I mean, this, you can look at all the other stuff and all the other measurables and what you do, but you know, part of being a receiver is being able to catch the football, and this guy certainly can.
Yeah, and you know what? I think the guys in Minnesota have their eye cast on that kid, and they're thinking, "Hey, we could reunite him with his college teammate Teddy, and away we go." And we got a good thing happening in Minnesota. You know, the one that that fascinates me, and you look at him, and you go, "Golly, man, is Breshad Perriman from Central Florida."
Yes, yeah.
I mean, there is a guy that has a lot of physical tools.
Different player from his dad, though, Jeff, because his dad, Brett Perriman, caught more than 500 passes in the NFL, but he was 5'10 and 180 pounds. This is a bigger kid, isn't it?
Yep, Mrs. Perriman must have had some size because he's 6'2", 212. So, you know, but here's the thing with him. When you watch him with the great speed and all the things he does, every once in a while he'll clunk one. I mean, he'll drop one, right? Just an easy throw. I dropped him because there just was some inconsistency in the catching.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about a guy who allegedly, now again, because I never put the watch on him, but he's got handheld times as low as 4.19, and that's unbelievable.
Yeah. Before we get to, let's finish off with the big receivers. Before we get to Philip Dorsett, I want to get your views on him. We talk about projecting with quarterbacks, and we talk about it with all rookies because they're not finished products. These are still young players, and they need to be coached when they get to the NFL. We don't quite know what we've got with Doriel Green Beckham, do we, from Missouri? Because a host of off-the-field problems, which means he's not played football in 2014. There's going to be red flags there that teams might be concerned about, but there's also going to be this temptation to take a guy, and I've watched film on him, who looks like, I'm not going to say he looks like Calvin Johnson, that's a big, big call, but he's 6'5", 237 pounds. He could be a Plaxico Burress in the NFL.
Yeah, he could. He certainly could. He has those physical tools. But again, there's just, as you mentioned, so many things about him. You know, Bennett, Oklahoma, Bennett, Missouri, been in trouble, you know, and a lot of that, that you know, you look at it and you just go, man, oh, man, oh, man. So I think he'll slide in the draft unless somebody just is going to say, we just believe so much in those physical gifts, we're going to draft and just take him and, you know, take the chance. But when you've got as deep a pool as this is, why do you need to do that?
Right.
I could see him slide, you know, because there are guys. You know, Jalen Strong, a kid out of Arizona State, 6'2". I mean, they've got big receivers in this draft that, you know, in my opinion, don't come with all the baggage that kid comes with. But, again, each organization is going to look at that differently. Each organization is going to research that differently. You know, here's the thing. It gets to the point, Neil, of teams hiring private investigators to go and gather information on these guys when there's character issues. So I'm sure if the teams do their homework and they come away coming out of this, you know, the interviews with him, the talks with him, the information gathering that they'll do, if they feel like he's, you know, worth that risk, he's a phenomenal physical talent. There's no question about that.
And Jeff, sometimes these red flags and these private investigators are going to turn up bad characters that you don't want to be part of. I mean, look at what's happened with Aaron Hernandez and the New England Patriots. I remember covering Lawrence Phillips in NFL Europe. I still think best player that ever played in NFL Europe from a talent point of view. He's serving over 30 years in prison at the moment and is now in connection with a homicide with his, you know, his jail cell partner. So, you know, you are going to get these bad eggs at times, aren't you? So sometimes you don't want to go near that problem player.
No, and you know, I just think when there is a pool of players that are close, like that guy, it's not worth the risk because, you know, the Hernandez thing is a perfect example. You know, it's just it's such a black mark on the organization. It's a black mark on the league. It's just it's unfortunate, and you know, again, there's a you know, a guy that was able to really convince the Patriots that he was worth taking. I mean, interesting, wrote a handwritten letter to you know, the Patriots that please take me because I'm a changed man, and was convincing enough to get him to take him in, I think, the third or fourth round. Got a contract extension out of him. And then, you know, it all unravels. And that's when you look at that stuff. And teams right now are very, very sensitive to that kind of thing because of all the publicity that's come out of that. And like you said, Lawrence Phillips' latest deal. And it's just, it's not worth the risk.
We talked about some of the bigger receivers there with size. Philip Dorsett doesn't have that. He's 5'10", 185 pounds. But, Jeff, I like the look of him. I thought he was, you know, he's got great speed, 4.29 or 4.27, whichever you want to believe. It was officially 4.33 at the NFL Combine. But, you know, I think you're right. There's great size in this class. But haven't Antonio Brown and T.Y. Hilton shown us that there's room for this kind of receiver as well? Where do you think Dorsett goes?
Yeah, there's still room for those guys in the National Football League, especially when you've got an elite skill set like he has, right? I mean, this guy can run. He's got that incredible short burst quickness.
Yep.
And I think that in the slot is so tough. You know, you watched him at the Senior Bowl. He really dominated practices at the Senior Bowl. He's breaking ankles out there, separating them from guys. I mean, he was special. Can get in and out of his breaks. He's got suddenness. I think again, he's a guy that will, if somebody's looking for that inside guy that they can move around and get the ball to him on bubble screens, and you know who's going to handle him down the seam. This kid's going to be a good player in the National Football League. You always want to have bigger, but again, I think you mentioned a couple guys, and I'll go to Cole Beasley, who's you know, smaller than this. It's, you know, just got assigned a $7 million deal in Dallas. So there's a place for these kind of guys,
especially now, Jeff, with the slot. You know, I think about ways you can attack the middle of the field, and you know, you can't get your head taken off by safeties like you used to be able to. That's a position in itself now, isn't it? Slot receiver. It's not like a wide receiver. You move around the formation. That's a position where you can excel and be a slot receiver your entire career.
Yeah, and you know, Wes Welker's made what may be a Hall of Fame career out of it. Right. And you know, and you look at this kid, and this illustrates why it's so critical in the NFL today that you have three corners, because you can't put a strong safety on him. No. You obviously can't put a linebacker on him. So you get into your sub packages, you get into your nickel and dime now. You've got to have depth at corner, because these guys, you get them matched up isolated inside, and it's tough if you can't cover.
Any tight ends in round one, Jeff? The only name I've seen is Max Williams from Minnesota, and even then I've seen people sort of wondering if he would be a first rounder. And again, that goes back to this is not a game changer, but teams are looking for mismatches at tight end, and this is not a great class for it, is it, when you think it's a developing position?
Yeah, I think you're going to get better tight ends off the basketball court right now than you're going to get out of this draft class.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Williams is a guy, but again, you're talking about a guy that with medium range speed. He's a 4.77 guy. He's 249 pounds. You know, he played in an offense at Minnesota. He's maybe the one that I would look at in this tight end group that has the, you know, what you're looking for as a dual threat, what I call dual threat tight end, inline blocker, and catch the ball and do those things. He's got good hands, all that stuff. Yep.
I know when you're excited and you're not selling it to me yet, but keep going.
All right. So I think he's the best. He's also real young. I mean, he came out way early.
Okay.
But you look at the rest of that tight end class, and there's big, strong guys that can block a little bit. You know, Michigan's got a receiver that is kind of half tight end, half wide receiver. And you think, you know, you go, well, maybe you could make an H out of him. But this is not a good class at tight end. And I think I would not take Max Williams in the first round. You know, I think he's going to be there in the second, maybe the third, if you have a tight end need. And you know, that's such a different position as we go around the league, and I made the joke about the basketball court, but more and more that's what you see. You're looking for a different kind of athlete than Max Williams or, you know, Clyde Walford or any of the other guys that are, you know, supposed to be the top-rated tight ends.
You're looking for Julius Thomas, who hardly played any college football, right? Yeah, he's a basketball
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, Jimmy Graham. You know, those kinds of guys that you know, have those long bodies that are such a tough matchup in, you know, wherever you put them.
Offensive linemen, Jeff, is a curious one for me, because there will be a lot of offensive linemen who go in the first round. There always are, because you mention it quite a lot, that you can't find those kind of big guys walking around the streets. You're looking for players that in this draft, I think in any draft, who kind of affect the pass, whether it be protecting quarterbacks, catching passes, getting after quarterbacks. But there's a few players in this draft that we're not quite sure where they're going to play yet. You know, you've got Brandon Scherff out of Iowa, might end up being a guard. Lael Collins out of LSU is listed as a tackle, but some think he might be nastier and more effective if he's moved inside. My first question to you on that is, would you rather see a pure pedigree? Well, I know for 100% that he is a left tackle. Or do you like the versatility, or does the versatility show that he's not quite one thing or the other?
Yes, good point. Because usually when they say he's a right tackle, it means he's not good enough to play
left tackle.
Left
tackle, right.
Yeah, and, you know, when you look at this, this is not, to me, a great group of offensive linemen. I think there's some pretty good players in the group, and usually they, as you said, Neil, and it's a good observation, when one goes, all of a sudden there's a run on them because there's so, you know, so few of them around, they tend to get overdrafted, I guess is the way I would describe it. But as you look at them, you talk about Scherff. I think Scherff's a guard, right? I just think that he's a little bit stiff. You know, again, when you play in the Big Ten, you don't face the same kind of defensive lineman that you do when you play in the SEC, for example, or the Pac-12. And I think Iowa has traditionally, you go back to Casey Wiegum and Brian Bulaga, they put good players in the National Football League as offensive linemen, Kirk Ferentz, their coach there, was an offensive line coach for Belichick in Cleveland.
Yep.
You know, they are really well coached, Iowa's offensive lineman. I think he will come in and be a starter, is a rookie in the National Football League, but it's going to be at guard.
Yep.
And he's got that toughness, that Iowa nastiness. You know, so again, I think he's a first round pick, but I don't think he's a tackle.
Who do you like as pure tackles?
Well, I think you look at, there's three guys in the tackle category that you got to say are you're talking about day one,
yeah,
players, right?
Mm-hmm.
Day one players, and you know, and in Eric Flowers from Miami, who's 6'6", 330 pounds. You mentioned Collins, 6'4", 305. And then there's a kid, DJ Humphrey, down at Florida, 6'5", 307. To me, again, just for my money, DJ Humphrey is the left tackle of that group.
Right.
He has the most fluidity. He can bend best. He, you know, you see him against great rushers, and you know, every week in the SEC. I'd like to see him be stronger than he is. I think that if he has a weakness as he comes to the next level, a little bit like you know, the Fisher kid that got picked in the first round by Kansas City a couple years ago. You know, the question on him was his strength coming out, and that's been the problem with him in the NFL. He just gets bull rushed too much. So if Humphreys can, you know, hunker down and get in the weight room and make himself a little bit stronger, particularly in his lower body, I think he's got a chance to be a really good tackle for a number of years. Collins, I've known since he was a high school player, Neil, because
okay.
he comes from Baton Rouge, and I watched him as a high school player in Baton Rouge. I never have gotten real hot about him because I think there's some work ethic things there.
Okay.
I mean, he has all the tools.
Yep.
I mean, you watched him play, and when, you know, you see him line up against Bud Dupree and you know, the Dante Fowler and the really good rushers in the SEC, he does a good job, right? He does a good job. But there's something about the kid that I just don't see the every down nastiness that you see from a guy like Scherf. I would love to see that package, you know, just go a little bit further. And you know, again, the one thing he can do, he can move around a little bit. Like you said, he's got played left tackle at LSU against those great rushers and did well. Neither of those two guys had a sack against him. And, you know, he shows nastiness at times, but does he compete every down? Because when you get to the National Football League,
you've got to bring it every time.
Yeah, there's no week off.
No.
Right? So that's the interesting thing with him, but I think he is, you know, I think he has a chance to be a first rounder. And then like we talked about, the kid from Miami, Eric Flowers, you know, the same kind of guy who I think is a right tackle. I don't think he's a left tackle. And you know, I know talking to scouts that I've talked to, some guys have him rated, you know, first half of the draft or first half of the first day. And then there are other people say he's a second day guy. So just I guess it kind of depends on what you see.
What about Andres Pete out of Stanford, Jeff? I'm surprised you didn't mention him there.
Big guy, big body guy. And you know, but again, I look at this group and I can't get all excited about them.
No.
You know, like I said, those three guys, and you know, there are some other guys that like Pete, as you mentioned, that have come. He looked, when I watched him work out, he looked a little heavy footed to me.
Right.
And again, maybe it was just me, but that scares me when you start talking about getting to that level, and then if you can't move your feet real well, you're going to struggle in pass protection. And we see that, you know, every week when we do the games.
One other guy I wanted to ask you about on the offensive line, Jeff, is Cam Irving of Florida State, because he's considered to be one of the safer picks in this draft because of the versatility, I think. And no one's quite sure. He might be a center in the NFL, could be a guard, but he made a mid-season switch in 2014 from tackle to the center position. Is it harder to go the further you move inside? I mean, tell us about, or would it be harder going from center out to tackle? I mean, should we be impressed by the fact that he moved that much?
It requires a different skill set, and you mentioned Cam Irving in his switch from tackle to center, and I think he really started to play well when he got in there. Some guys don't, you know. It's a little different world in there, and it's more physical. It usually requires a guy that, you know, is a more physical guy. But where he struggled was when he was out in space, he didn't look real confident, you know. And then he got in there where there were bodies around him, and he's got superior quickness. You know, he blocks as much with his quickness as he does with his strength. And you know, I thought he showed the athleticism that you really look for in a center. And a center is a critical position now in the National Football League because they have to do so many things. They have to snap the ball to the quarterback. You know, in the normal position, you got to snap in the gun. You got to play with the, you know, all this 3-4 stuff they're seeing now. You're going to have to play with a 320-pound guy right on your, you know, over the top of you. Then you've also got to have this, if you're playing against the 4-2 nickel teams, and you got to have the speed to kick out and get to the edge and get to the second level. So it's a really difficult position to play, and it requires a special kind of guy. And I think this kid is the best of that bunch. Now, there's another kid I want to talk about in that center group, that Hronus Grassu from out at Oregon,
yep,
who has been a really, really good player and has played in that shotgun offense, you know, his whole career.
Yep.
It'll be interesting to see. He's going to have to get used to somebody putting their hands on his butt because he hasn't happened much in his career. But you know, he's a good player, a tough kid. Got really good. You know, leadership skills, and that's important in there at center because they make all the calls and do all that stuff. And he played extremely well when he played against great competition. So that guy, you know, you like. And then now there's one in this draft that's kind of intriguing to everybody. And I watched him yesterday. I watched interviews with him yesterday. And it's a kid named Ali Marpet from Hobart College.
Now, it's a tiny school, right?
Hobart College might be as big as the desk you're sitting at right now.
That's Division 4 or 5, not Division 3, right?
it is Division 3. Now, this kid was a 205-pound offensive lineman as a junior in high school and grew to 230 as a senior. But 230 coming out of high school now is a midget. Yeah. You know, when you start talking about Division I college football players. Came to college, and he was 255 by the time he showed up in fall camp as a freshman. And now he's 6'4", 307. You know, he had an incredible Senior Bowl. I mean, just to get to the Senior Bowl from Hobart College is an incredible thing. But he went to the Senior Bowl, and all of a sudden, they moved him from tackle to center at the Senior Bowl, and away he goes. And, I mean, he just looked like he belonged. I watched him yesterday work out, and I watched his pro workout at Hobart. And here's Hobart College, and it's funny because, you know, swear to God, this is true. The chancellor of the school, the president, you know, students, they're just standing on the sidelines watching this phenomenon. Here's Reggie McKenzie from the Raiders, you know, the general manager of the Raiders is there, and all these coaches, and they're at Hobart College. And I don't even know if they had bags to use for the workout, but the kid's out there working his tail off, and, you know, you look at him and you really root for the kid a little bit. But I watched him, I saw a short arm kid that, you know, is kind of, I don't know, you know, you just kind of hope that the kid can make it because it's a neat story. But yeah. You know, he's risen up to everybody's draft boards, and he had, you know, he ran the best 40 time he ran 4.9 he ran as fast as Jameis Winston ran at the combine. So, you know, he's 6'4", 307 pounds now, and shoots, maybe we'll have a guy from Hobart College in the NFL.
Well, I'm glad you said he excelled at the Senior Bowl, because at least he would have played against some players with size, because I would imagine that playing against playing at Hobart, he probably went up against defensive tackles that were 230 pounds or something, you know. So it's going to be different when he gets to the NFL and Vince Wilfork's staring at him the other side of the line of scrimmage, right?
Well, you know, you hear the kid, you know, like I said, I watched his interviews, and he didn't seem fazed by it all. I mean, obviously, he it's got to be an incredible thing for him, but he didn't seem like it was too big for him. Yeah. Now, as you say, that's an interview. That's not Vince Wilfork trying to rip your face mask off.
Let's take a couple of questions, and that's offense done in terms of the draft. We'll look at defense next week. Let's take some questions in the mailbag then, and we'll start with a draft-related one. It comes from Joe Wood, who says, will someone trade up for Marcus Mariota, and if so, how far? I think, Jeff, it's important for people to remember, I mean, obviously, there will be teams that are hungry at quarterback, but because these NFL teams, they kind of put points on the worth of a draft pick, I don't think you're going to see a team come, say they have to go up to number two to the Tennessee Titans. I don't think you can look outside the top 10 in terms of teams moving up. It won't be Philadelphia going all the way up from a pick in the 20s, because it would surely cost them too much to get up there.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, it's interesting now. LaDainian Tomlinson, I heard him say last night that he does not believe that Phillip Rivers will be back in San Diego. And he believes that he'll be in Tennessee and Mariota will be in San Diego.
Wow.
Which is that's a statement. I mean, that is really a statement. But apparently Phillip has declined a contract offer from San Diego. He's in his out, what they call the out year of his contract, mm-hmm. last year of his contract. And maybe you're San Diego and you're saying, well, we're only going to have him for one more year, and there's a franchise quarterback out there, and, you know, we've got a young football team, and you know, it's let's do it, let's pull the trigger on this thing. So, you know, I'm sure there's going to be an awful lot's going to happen in this next 2 weeks. It's what makes it such a great thing leading up to the draft, all the you know, cloak and dagger stuff that's going on right now.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Not many teams go from one franchise quarterback to another without some sort of down years, and Chargers have a potential to avoid that. Here's a question from let's have a look at this one from Gridiron Gibber, who says, how much will Adrian Peterson have an effect on the draft, or will that be a separate trade if he's traded? I think if it happens, Jeff, it's going to be around the draft, because it will involve draft picks.
Great point, because you gotta find, I mean, you're talking about a Hall of Fame level back, right? Mm. So to get him, you're going to have to give up an awful lot. Now, you want, if you're going to give things up, now you may give up some players or a player or two in that, but you're probably going to give up more in terms of futures, and that's draft picks. You know, that's the kind of package I think it's going to take to get Adrian Peterson out of Minnesota.
I'll just take this one quickly, Jeff. Jack Healy says, if a player gets traded, for example, Jimmy Graham, is their contract with their old team kept when they move, or can it be restructured? It can be restructured. Look at what Buffalo did with LeSean McCoy. They restructured his deal, but when you trade for a player, you get their contract as well, which is a Jeff, that's a reason why we're not sure this Adrian Peterson trade will ever develop, because somebody is inevitably going to inherit a $13 or $14 million per year 30-year-old back. So you do inherit the contract that they're currently under.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that but I would disagree with that and say, if you're Minnesota, do you want a $13 million 30-year-old back that you've had animosity with? That contract may be a reason why he's not in Minnesota too. There are people out there, and you know, one of those guys is an oil guy from Arkansas who would certainly love to see that guy in a silver helmet with a big blue star on it, and I think can eat that money. I think what Romo did with his contract is, you know, kind of a precursor, if you will, to try and find a way to get that done. Franchising Dez and letting your Murray go, those things all point to me as moves not designed to bring Peterson, but making it possible to bring Peterson.
All right, I'm glad you disagreed with me there, Jeff, because our final question comes from Lee Perry, and it's not Lee Scratch Perry, as you asked last time. But Lee, Lee says, I love the podcast, but you guys always seem to agree. What do you two disagree on when it comes to the NFL? And I thought about this, Jeff, and I remember in the studio a couple of times, the only things I could think of, you know, obviously I just copy whatever you say and just go with that. But I remember a couple of times, you know, I've thought that quarterbacks should be protected because they're the stars of the game, and you've not always thought of that. And I probably could happily see the back of the extra point, and I don't think – would they be two for you that we've disagreed on in the past?
I think those are two areas. The third area would be that team that you follow, but other than those three things. But you know what, Neil, in a way – our differences relative to protecting the quarterback, in my opinion, have more to do with what they're asking defensive linemen to do. Like,
yes,
we just had the officials from the league through our complex yesterday, and we went through all the new rules, and we've moved our PAT back to the 15-yard line, and it's a 32-yard field goal now to kick an extra point. You can, if you want the ball, you know, to go for two, you get it inside the five, and all that stuff. But the thing that I keep going to, and we watched it yesterday on tape, is how a defensive lineman can be responsible for himself coming off of a block. And you know, for example, you're fighting to get to the quarterback as hard as you can. You're coming off the block. You slip off the block and lose your feet, or you're tripped in all those bodies in there. And if you strike the quarterback below the waist, it's a penalty. Well, how in the heck are you going to be a 300-pound guy and in midair change your path?
Yeah.
I still don't get that one. So I just think that I understand protecting the quarterbacks. I don't understand the logic of saying that you're asking this man to change him, you know, change direction in air. And, you know, Nadia Comaneci can't do that. So no. Certainly, you know, Vince Wilfork ain't.
Jeff, I agree with you. And that's as good a place to end this week's podcast. Let's end on a harmonious note. Why not? This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's a USP content production. Jeff, great stuff digging into the players today. We'll do it again next week with defense. Until then, go on.
We get to the dark side next week. That's when it's really fun.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I know. That's when you get excited, right? When all those guys that can inflict a bit of pain. Until then, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.